Live from the Stone Academy Medical Assisting Studio.
WZMX-FM and WZMX HD1 Hartford. Always on radio.com. Radio.com. Hot 93.7.
It's time to stop the music and let the voices be heard. Call 860-674-9307 and let's talk.
Hello?
It's time for Voices with your host, DJ Big Man, on Hot 93.7.
All right, it's that time for Voices. Another episode of Voices on Hot 93.7, hot937.com. Big Man here, and I have a very, very, very special guest on the line. My goodness, I've been excited about this since we got the confirmation, and so I'm not going to hold back any longer. I have it, and I had to formally say congratulations to her when she called in because I haven't seen or met her since then. All right. U.S. Representative for Connecticut's 5th Congressional District, Johanna Haynes. How are you? Can you hear me? Uh-oh. Let's make sure.
Oh, no. That was me. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay.
I said, hey, big man, I can hear you just fine.
All right.
Thank you so much for having me. Like I told you, it never gets old.
It never gets old. Well, you know what? Here, what we're going to do is just have a general discussion, and we're going to talk about a few things. Of course, I have a few questions, but just general topics. This show is basically designed to discuss the issues, just get things off of our chest, maybe answer some questions that people may have. And first and foremost, I mean, you're an educator as well as a congresswoman. So I have to ask, is it more difficult dealing with the students or people in Congress?
Definitely Congress. I mean, students are student. Every day is a new day with students. Mm-hmm. They come in with they're visionary, they're forward thinking, they're incredibly aspirational, mm-hmm. and I think more importantly, they're still malleable. They're mm-hmm. still accepting of other people's ideas.
Right.
And I think that especially for me, I taught in Waterbury. Mm-hmm. There was just a heightened appreciation for other people's children, you know, for other people's background. It was a very diverse city, a diverse student body, and that just became a part of who we were. And in Congress, as you may or may, well, I'm sure you can tell, it's very partisan. People are very set in their ways.
Yes.
And there's less of an ability to change.
Mm. Well, you know what? Not only did you teach in Waterbury, but you were recognized as National Teacher of the Year in 2016. We can't let that get past us. Now, that had to be one of the highlights.
Oh, my God. I thought that was as good as it gets. I mean, for me to have always wanted to be a teacher mm-hmm. and poured my heart and soul in it, and then to be recognized at the height of my profession mm-hmm. for the work that I was doing. But I think more importantly, my students, who were amazing. I mean, I have to tell you, in the course of my career, I had the dopest students with just incredible kids with just giant hearts and a tremendous amount of empathy who volunteered in their community. And me winning that award was really an opportunity to showcase them and what they did. Mm-hmm. And I think that was what they needed. That wasn't something they were used to. People had never really talked about all of the amazing things that were happening in Waterbury Public Schools or with these kids in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to be recognized on a national stage through me, I think was probably the highlight of that whole journey.
Wow. And listen, if you're just joining us, it's Voices on Hot 93.7, hot937.com, and we have Congresswoman Johanna Haynes on the line, all right, and she made history here in New England, all right, as the first two women of color elected to Congress in New England. Ladies and gentlemen, that in itself is an achievement for the ages. Now, you know, we were talking about school and everything else and the students and everything. And I know there's mixed thoughts on the back to school initiative. Some people, and I'll be honest, like myself, I mean, I'm really, I have a lot of questions. I have a daughter who'll be 16 and she's going back to school, and it's like, I don't know how safe this situation is right now. And I mean, I'm just honest. I don't know. Some people feel like, you know, it's time for them to go back to school. And then others, like myself, have those concerns. What are your thoughts there? And what maybe, if any information or updated information, can you provide for us?
Well, just two things. First of all, I just want to touch on what you said about the fact that in 2018, for the first time in history, two African-American women from New England went to Congress, myself, and shout out to my sister, Ayanna Pressley, from Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And like I've always said, that is, I mean, there's so much power in that statement, but there's also so much shame, because it really says we have so much work to do if it took until 2020. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also worth mentioning that, I mean, if it took until 2018, but it's also worth mentioning that 2020 was the first time Connecticut Democrats nominated a person of color to go to Congress. Mm. You know, last year I did not have the nomination, so this is the first time. Mm. So it really speaks to, and I'm sure we'll get to this later in the interview,
yes,
but it really speaks to really the work that needs to be done internally and externally to engage, you know, and expand the electorate and invite people in. And once people have a seat at the table, to allow them to use that agency to bring more people in. And that's something that is just incredibly important to me. But to your question about school reopenings, I have been unapologetically vocal from the very beginning, mm-hmm. and raising the questions that teachers were asking and that parents were asking, because I spent upwards of a decade in a school building, and I know what the ventilation is like. I know how difficult it is to have kids 6 feet apart. And I also understood that none of this could be done without federal resources. There had to be a major investment coming from the federal government, and that had not happened yet. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of questions, and I think I have a responsibility in this position that I hold to ask those questions and look for accountability and get information from my constituents and the people of my community to take back to Washington and say, we can't do this unless all of these things happen. So this, I mean, the perspective that I brought to Congress and my lifetime in the classroom was incredibly helpful in this discussion about school reopenings. Mm-hmm. We should have started planning this back in April. I've been asking those questions of my colleagues in Congress, of the Speaker of the House, of leadership, what we were going to do. This wasn't a problem that snuck up on us in August.
Right.
These are things that we could have been investing in the resources, investing the infrastructure, preparing teachers with professional development for virtual learning if we had to proceed that way. And then to the other point, everyone talks about kids are losing all of this academic time. And I guess I can say I'm excited that people are having a national conversation about the achievement gap and the disparities from one district to the other, because mm-hmm. these are things that I have been shouting from the rooftops about since before my time in Congress. But, you know, this idea that kids need to see their friends and they need to see their teachers and the relationships, all of that is true. So I've been encouraging the people who say we should open our schools to say that we need to similarly invest resources in trauma-informed counselors and guidance counselors and support services, so that when these kids come back with all these questions and all this stress, that they have someone there to meet them. Mm. Because school will be different. In-person school will be different in September. Mm-hmm. This idea of you're spending time with your friends and you're talking to your teachers and having one-on-one time, it's going to be different. So I'm still not comfortable at a point where I say, you know what, I can throw my hat into this ring and say, I with fidelity believe that we're ready to open up 100% in person in September. I'm not there yet.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Which is a powerful statement, because I have felt that to a certain degree, for political purposes, there's been kind of a disregard for safety. It's like, this might be a popular decision politically, and so we're going to send them back to school. But I'm like, okay, but you're releasing people from prisons, you're canceling different things, but you want to have school. And in some regards, some schools are already at capacity. So now you want to take all of these kids, some above capacity. Now you all want to take all of them, push them back into schools. And the reality of it and things that we face, I mean, we see the videos. Some of us have had those encounters where there are parents who don't want to practice safety measures in terms of wearing masks and so on. So now you have the children of those parents who have the same mindset, and they're bringing that into the school. So you're going to spend more time addressing those discipline issues than anything else. And so that,
man, you are absolutely right. And this is going to open the door to a series of challenges that I don't think we've even considered. Mm-hmm. As you saw, a group of parents in Connecticut, I don't know if you may or may not have seen this, just filed a lawsuit where they don't think that masks should be mandated.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be high school teachers who are going to have kids, you know, who are 17, 18 years old, who are saying, I'm not wearing a mask and you're not going to make me.
Mm-hmm.
But you are absolutely right. This conversation has evolved in a political way that is dangerous.
Mm.
You see college football seasons being canceled. There's no other segment of our economy, not businesses, not bars, not restaurants, not any public spaces, where they're saying we're going to open at capacity and have people in these spaces for 6 to 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we think that it is wise to do that with our children. This has definitely become a political conversation whereby if we can open our schools, it shows that we are returning to a sense of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we will return to normalcy, but that will happen when people are healthy and they feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't the new normal. We're not always going to have virtual school or hybrid school. But in the middle of a global pandemic, when we don't have a national strategy or testing, tracing, quarantine under control, or even we haven't even agreed on whether or not we should all wear masks,
mm-hmm.
to send our children back, I think it's to their peril.
Mm. Johanna Hayes here on the line, and I told you guys we get to the core of these issues, but these were pressing questions. And you know, as a parent, I have to ask these questions, and I'm sure I've had these discussions with people before, and we've talked about it, and it's been an ongoing discussion here on air, because I just don't get it. And someone really brought something to my attention recently. They said, you know, a lot of times kids, I mean, their immune systems are pretty strong when they're younger, but being isolated for so long, it may have broken down their immune system some. So that makes them more susceptible. I don't know. I'm not a medical professional. But these are some questions that maybe we need to ask. And if those questions haven't been asked, before we just throw them to the wolves, and then we have a situation like we've seen in certain markets in the South and in Midwest, where there's been these huge breakouts in like a week.
Right.
You know, it's kind of counterproductive to kind of, oh, throw them to the wolves. If that happens, then we scale back again. Why do we have to have them as guinea pigs at this time?
I think you just said it. The statement, I don't know, is probably the most telling, because we don't know enough about the way this virus moves,
mm-hmm.
or how it moves with children.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember back in March, as soon as this virus, we had these major outbreaks, most school districts across the country shut down.
Mm-hmm.
We saw in New York where teachers passed away. We saw the same thing in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen outbreaks in Georgia at summer camps, and you said a week, literally it was within 24 hours
mm-hmm.
that we had hundreds of people in quarantine.
Right.
So we don't know enough about it. So this idea of sending all in person to begin with, I think we should have a phase-in approach. If it's hybrid, if it's small groups, and then as we get more information, then we open up gradually, just like every other segment of our economy. I don't know why our children should be treated any differently.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can tell you, that as for me in my house, my son will be home with me until, you know, I have a middle schooler, and he is, and, you know, I'm at the point where I need to make the decision that's best for my child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what every parent is going to have to weigh. And it's unfortunate that the parents who are struggling the most with this decision are the parents who say, well, I have to go back to work. I need my kids to go somewhere. So it's a double-edged sword. You know, part of it is academic, but part of it is the economy. Mm-hmm. But again, it's always up to schools and teachers to shoulder these burdens. You know, why aren't employers saying, well, let's go to a hybrid model, or let's have you work 2 days on or 2 days off because I recognize that schools are not open? The only segment that's expected to bend until they break is schools and children.
Wow. Wow. Hot 93.7, hot937.com. Voices, big man here, Johanna Hayes on the line. And, wow, this is, it's baffling to me. I can't imagine how many times you come home with a headache, you know, just dealing with this type of stuff. And it's like every day seems to be a new fight. And so, I mean, I applaud you for being able to do this and still smile, because I don't know if I could do that. You know, Jenny says to me, Jenny Boom Boom, she says to me all the time, oh, you're going to be a politician. Jenny, I'm not. I'm not. I don't understand it, because there's no way that I could see humanly possible to politicize the safety of American people just to think it's going to boost popularity or grab more votes. It sickens me to think that way. Why aren't we thinking logically? So I can just imagine the amount of arguments that you have on a daily basis, or things that you have an opinion on, or that you've spoken against. And it's like, shouldn't this be common sense?
Well, big man, you're right. That happens every day. But let me first say to you, be careful, because Jenny's a prophet. Be careful.
No!
If she spoke it, I can tell you, when I was on the show a couple years ago, she kept saying, this isn't it for you. I could see, and I was like, absolutely not, Jenny. So I'm just going to leave that one right there.
No!
But you're right. So many times I'm there, and things that are common sense to me, I don't understand why I'm having to fight to have that injected into the conversation. But again, the perspective that I bring is very different than the average perspective of a congressperson. But what I will tell you is that you have to know who you are before you get there.
Right.
You know, I went to Congress with, you know, joy in my heart and this understanding of I have a responsibility to my community. And it's like the joy that I have, the world didn't give it and the world didn't take it away, or the world can't take it away. And that's, you go in like that. And this year, I have to tell you, there were times where I had to make some unpopular decisions, where I had to say things that were not widely accepted. I mean, even with the reopening school conversation. But again, I am not in this position with this agency and this platform to not speak up for the people who do not have a voice. I never wanted to be a politician. This was not in something that I dreamed of since I was a young girl. You know, it was a natural evolution of, I don't like the things that are happening, and I realize that they are memorialized in law, so what I need to do is help change the law. That was the way by which I got here. So now that I'm here, I'm going to speak up. And it's not something that's hard or frustrating for me, because this is my real life. You know, when I'm in the room and I'm speaking up for people, I mean, every week, last week with the storm, I went back to my colleagues. We need to figure out a way to get emergency SNAP benefits for the people in my state who literally 3 days after the first of the month, when many of my elderly constituents, you know, many working people who receive SNAP benefits just got their benefits stocked up because we're in the middle of a pandemic, and now they haven't had power for 5 days. These are the things that were top of mind for me, because I'm not too far removed from that situation. When we're talking about schools, I was in a school district that's Title I, 100% free and reduced lunch in a 100-year-old building. I understand overcapacity. I understand poor ventilation. So all of these things are things that I have to speak up about. When we started looking at the numbers for COVID-19 in the state and the disproportionate impact it had on the Black community, met with my staff and introduced a resolution determining that racism is a public health crisis. Because when you look at the data, just the data, nothing else, you take out the way you think, the way you feel, what you believe, and just look at the data, you see that this community is disproportionately impacted by lack of access to health care. And I can go into these rooms with fidelity and fight those fights because I don't have to rely on secondhand information. Again, this is my real life. And if I'm in the room, I'm going to ask the questions for all of the people who will never be in that room or never have a seat at that table.
Wow. I like this. I like where this is going. Now, you said something that was very strong. It hit me really, really hard. You said you came in with a different perspective, which kind of ties into something that I always thought, because I feel like there's a lot of people who sit in those seats who are, for lack of better, detached from reality. So they may represent certain areas and they know nothing about the reality of living in those areas. And so that's where some of these decisions are made. And oh, gosh, I feel like I'm walking into a trap with this statement because this is why Jenny said what she said. But I feel like, you know, if you're going to represent an area, become a part of that area. There's no way that you can be the voice for something that you're not a part of. And I feel in large numbers, there are representatives for certain districts where they barely spend time in those districts unless they're looking for votes or photo opportunities, or they're passing through on their way home. So that seems so to be the reality. Yeah, well, not get you, but I feel like because I made this statement and that's what made her say, well, you should run for office. I'm like, no.
But you know what, though? Jenny's right, because that's what it's going to take. More everyday people, you know, just stepping up and saying, Congress, first of all, is the people's house. It's the only body in the federal government where you have to be elected there. You can't be appointed by the governor. You can't take over the end of someone's term. If the term ends, they have a special election. So the only way to get to Congress is for the people to elect you and send you there. I think because of that, it should represent everybody in this country should be able to find someone that represents them in the Congress. So there were, you know, a majority, 70-80% lawyers. And it's like, if you're making legislation about education, then you should have some teachers. If you're making legislation about health care, then you should have some doctors. Oh, we need everybody. And all of those people together collaborate. There's some push, there's some pull, but you have some robust discussions that produce really good legislation. So you should have everybody. But I think it's kind of twofold, because this my district, I represent 41 towns with everything from cities like Waterbury, Danbury, New Britain, to rural areas like Cornwall, Falls Village, Washington Depot, and then some suburban areas, Canton, Avon, Simsbury. It's one thing to be of a community. It's another thing to be willing to learn a community, to make yourself available, to open your doors and listen to people. I sit on the Committee of Agriculture, which people are like, what do you know about agriculture? What does that have to do with you? The Committee on Agriculture covers food security, programs like SNAP and WIC and school lunches, but it also covers farmers. We have a lot of dairy farmers and small family farmers in my community, and I really spent a lot of time getting to know them, listening to them, and realized that they had no representation in Congress. You know, it was mostly corporate farmers or large family farmers, and I said, teach me how to be your voice in Congress. And I literally spend more time at these farms and in these small communities than I ever have. But also, the perspective that I bring is important, because I'll tell you a quick story. I remember at the beginning of the Congress, we were in the shutdown, and, you know, they were circulating this thing where all of these members were saying they were not going to take their paychecks until the shutdown was over. And I remember, like, freezing, like, wait, I can't afford to not take a paycheck. I have a mortgage, and this is my only job. Can't we just keep working to open government so everybody could pay their mortgage? Because there was something that didn't sit right with me. Like, if you could forego your salary, if you don't need to work, then we're not the same person.
Mm.
You know, if you could say, you know, I'm invested, I'm in this because, you know, this is my job. I understand how what it means to, if you don't have a paycheck, you can't pay your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you don't have to rely on your paycheck to pay your mortgage, then we just bring very different perspectives.
Mm.
And there's a place for you, but I think that there's a place for me too. And that's what our communities look like. And that, I mean, that's why more people who never imagined themselves in these roles, like you, should be running. Wait a minute, where do you live?
Hartford.
Where do you live, big man? Because I want you primarying me. I'm going to talk you into primary.
I cannot do this. Oh, my goodness. How do we go left? How do we go left? Okay. all right. Listen, it's Hot 93.7, hot937.com. Big man here. No, not running for any office. No, no, no. Johanna Hayes, listen, this is very eye-opening. One, because I think a lot of people may have the perception that, you know, this person is fighting for me. This person is fighting for me. But if they don't know your struggles and if they haven't spent time trying to find out, which is, you know, very key to you sitting down with those small farmers and people with small businesses to learn how to be the voice for them. Because someone can only argue for you if they know exactly what they're arguing for. And like you said, you know, if they're able to forego their salaries and say, hey, we'll forego our salaries for 3 months, we'll be fine. And then there's you saying, no, I won't be fine. 9 times out of 10, most of the people who they're representing won't be fine. But they can't understand that because the norm for them is being able to say, hey, well, we don't need this salary over here. We're still going to be okay. That doesn't happen, in all honesty, that doesn't happen for maybe 90 to 95% of the people who I know. And so if that's not true for them, but 90 to 95% of the people who they represent, that's their truth. Like, I can't make it for 20 days without a paycheck.
Right.
Then that's a problem. That's a disjoint there, and that needs to be addressed. And I think we need to pay more attention to things like that. You know, when it's time to ask the questions of our elected officials, we need to understand because they'll get out when it's time for the vote. And it's like, look, when they're out there, don't be afraid to ask those questions. Don't just be there for a photo opportunity. Let's ask some questions. And that's just my thoughts on it.
No, you're absolutely right. I heard people when I first started running, people would give me advice. You have to go to the churches or the barbershops. And I had to remind people when I go to church, I go to worship. So it's very different. It's not a place where you show up just during election season.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like even with these roles, I have an apartment in DC and, you know, I live full time in Connecticut. Those are things that I didn't even really appreciate that I would have to. I mean, if you see the market in D.C., I didn't even, like, understand that I'm going to have to rent an apartment in D.C. as well. So paying a rent and a mortgage, which is why, you know, the average person doesn't sign up to do this kind of work because the way the system is built, it's not meant to be inclusive. And I don't know if that's by design or default, but what I do know is that when you're sitting at the table, you have the ability to bring those things to bear and say, well, wait a minute, we need to do business differently so that we're inviting more people, not less, into the conversation. We need to do business differently so that more people are engaged. We need to make sure that more people, not less, have access to the vote. And that doesn't happen until it's one thing to know the people that you represent, but you also have to care. You know, there's a lot of people who know their constituents. They look at the data. They do polling all the time. But you have to care that their lives are not getting better. You have to care that, you know, they're losing food or the impact that it would have on them if they lost a paycheck. So all of that comes with this job, and those are things that I work every day. When I was a teacher, I used to ask myself, is this what I would want for my child?
Mm-hmm.
and I approach this work in the very same way. Is this good enough for my family? You know, is this health care good enough for my family? Is this legislation good enough for my family, who, for all intents and purposes, are still, you know, struggling with many of these issues?
Mm-hmm.
So by helping my family, I'm helping your family and everyone else's, because that's who we should be.
Wow. Voices right here on Hot 93.7, hot937.com. Now, switching channels a bit, we have seen such an uprise in racial tension in this country. And it's disheartening at this point because, for me, as I've said earlier on air, I'm having conversations with my children that are so uncomfortable, and I feel like these were conversations that my parents didn't even want to have with me. And now here we are, me having to have that conversation with their grandchildren. How difficult is it? I'm sure, you know, when you go to D.C., I'm sure you see protests on a bigger scale than we see it here.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that addressed, you know, when you guys sit down at the table, or is it even acknowledged?
Oh, my gosh. So over the last couple months, everything is about timing. Mm-hmm. In life, everything is about timing. And you know that, and I know that. Mm-hmm. We had, in 2008, we elected the first African-American as president in Barack Obama, and we still were not ready to have many of the conversations that we're having now. So we are at a point where public sentiment has shifted the needle, where people are demanding that we address some of these things. And I think for me, what I am most proud of is that it's not just black people saying that we need to address some of these inequalities. It's all people. Like I said, my district is 41 towns. I saw towns that were 95% white, mm-hmm, having protests and using their voice to speak up for other people. And it really forces us to just look at things, the systemic inequalities, the unintended biases, the implicit biases, and say, how do we change structures so that we make our country a better place?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, first of all, the fact that we're having those conversations is progress, but also the fact that there are people who are doubling down, insisting that these things don't exist, is also part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need is elected officials who are willing to go head on and have these very difficult conversations and legislate from a place that looks at the future and says, how are we, you know, making our communities better for everyone? I've seen so many people, even in Congress, there are people who, these are difficult conversations to have.
Mm.
When you start to talk about it, it's like, well, you know, we don't want to be too aggressive or too progressive. And it's like, actually, this is pretty basic. It's not progressive at all to,
right,
think that, you know, no one from any community should be dying at a disproportionate rate. That's,
mm-hmm,
pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not progressive at all to say, when we're looking at housing and income disparities, that they exist, or healthcare disparities. But what we can do, even though we weren't the architects of the system, we have the unique ability as legislators to make sure that we close those gaps and correct things moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who is uncomfortable, I mean, you should be uncomfortable having that conversation, but anyone who is unwilling to use their agency and their advocacy in any way they can to fix it moving forward is part of the problem and is an accomplice.
Mm.
And it's just that simple, because this isn't difficult. It's not difficult for me to look at someone else's child and say, your child's life matter. All I am asking is for the same courtesy for my children.
Mm.
You know, when they leave this house, you know, I'm a congresswoman and my husband's a police officer, but that doesn't change. We can't shed the skin when we leave this house. You know, our children still leave this house as young black men.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm asking for is the same grace on my children's lives. And that's for me, that's worth fighting for. And I think that we have a unique opportunity right now, not to just illuminate the problem,
mm-hmm,
but to really work together and create some real solutions and really look at how can we do things differently, you know, acknowledging what we have not done. I mean, big man, it's no mistake that 2020 is the first time Connecticut Democrats ever nominated a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
That's just real. That's just data.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Never in the history of our state. We're one of the original 13 colonies.
Right.
And we've never nominated a person of color until 2020.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody in government in this state can't look at that and say, you know what? We have work to do. We need to revisit and reevaluate our practices to make sure that people feel welcome and included in this party and engaged and not taken for granted and want to work alongside of us. If we're not having those real, honest, internal conversations, then we're part of the problem.
Mm. Wow. Powerful, powerful statements. Johanna Hayes here. It's Hot 93.7, hot937.com. Now, this is a different type of question. I actually posed this question on air a while back, and I'm still conflicted with it because me, you know, just being in Hartford and growing up, we had so many things for kids to do, so many youth centers and stuff. And now it seems in certain areas that police substations outnumber youth facilities and community centers. And it's like, what kind of statement does that send? Because it's like there's almost, I don't know, an extra effort. Okay, we need police substation here, here, here. Why not create more youth centers? Because there's nothing for anyone to do. Okay, you don't want them out in the streets. They want to be creative. They want to do things. Let's have a community center here. Let's have some of the men from the community in charge of these centers, some of the men and women, and we sit down and have workshops with the kids. But let's not just give them an abundance of places to be jailed and locked up. Let's
right.
give them more places to be constructive. Let's give them more places to learn things. Because I've said, you know, I've learned more stuff out of school than I learned in school. I've learned more stuff about the real world and things that are really needed to survive in this world and financial things and stuff like that. I've learned more of that outside of school than in school. And so sometimes it's like, okay, what are you really preparing them for? What is this curriculum preparing us for if it's not preparing us for real life? I mean, you know, I've been trying to help my daughter with this new funny math, and I this is crazy to me. When is she going to use this? When is she going to use this? But
don't carry the one.
Exactly. I'm like, we don't even, what, do we just drop the one? What are we doing here? But it's crazy to me because if we are going to put them out in the real world, let's not put them out in the real world with false hopes and false dreams. Let's put them out in the real world with real hopes, real dreams, real knowledge, and real skills. And I feel like we could develop our youth more in the cities if we had more community centers, if we had more places for them to go and learn and build, when there's nothing else to do in the streets but get locked up and have more and more places to house criminals and less places to develop leaders. Then what do you think is going to happen there? I feel like it's such a bad message that's being given to our youth across the board.
You're absolutely right. There's a quote by Frederick Douglass that I love, and he says, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And I, you know, my answer to everything is always going to be education. That's why I went to Congress. You know, it is, when we're talking about investing in our economy and making sure that we build our economy back, I think that the most cost-effective thing that we can, the most cost-effective and fruitful thing that we can do for our economy is to make those investments in children. Give them the kind of start and the kind of future that they deserve. Give them job skills and training and wraparound services. Those community development block grants so that they have neighborhood centers where they feel safe and protected. Like you, I grew up in a community. You didn't have to leave the projects for anything.
Mm-hmm.
We had everything. You had after-school programs. You had mini camp in the summer, vacation Bible school. We had movie nights on Thursday. And you had a community of people in a community center where you didn't have to be out in the street.
Right.
And you see those programs either diminishing or enrollment being threatened because the funding is threatened. So those are the types of investments we have to make. And I think the thing for me that just frustrates me is when people say, that's the parent's job. What about those kids who don't have a parent?
Mm-hmm.
Or the parents who are doing everything they can and still can't just make ends meet? I think we have a collective and a communal responsibility our communal morality should be saying to us, people always say, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood where if somebody else's mother saw you doing something bad, they'd send you home or whatever. That's when communities cared about each other. And I think we need to return to that. This idea of every man for himself, every family for himself, as long as I'm okay, I don't care about anyone else, is really what is leading to the breakdown of our country. And those are things where we need those community programs. We need those services. Because one of the things I learned as an educator, the experience I had as the National Teacher of the Year was probably one of the most powerful times of my life, because I visited almost every state and multiple countries and saw education on the ground, visited schools, talked to teachers, talked to parents, and the disparity in the way we educate our children. So your zip code really does determine your future. When you look at the buildings that children were being educated in, the textbooks they were using, the people who were standing in front of them, the support services that were in place. You know, in some districts, you get an email saying SATs are going to happen on this date. In other districts, there's a six-month program to prepare you to take those SATs at no cost to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're starting like that, it's no surprise what the outcomes will be. When we are funding schools based on local funding, then the poorest communities are going to have the poorest schools. And until we can have that conversation, I've seen, even in this state, people protesting that, you know, Black Lives Matter and all people matter and we have to do better and we have to seek justice. And then in the same week, vote down any proposal to have low-income housing in their community.
Mm.
It's almost like, yeah, they matter, just not in my name.
Just keep that over there.
So until we're saying, you know what, if this school is good enough for my kids, then it's good enough for your kids, then we are not truly addressing the problem.
Mm.
And if that seems taboo to anyone or difficult, in my mind, in the world that I operate in, that just feels basic.
Exactly.
So I guess we need more basic politicians.
Need a changing of the guard, because that's
we need more basic people running for office.
Exactly, because my goodness, at least we'll understand what's going on as a whole. Listen, I'm just blown away by your honesty. I'm blown away by everything that you're doing. And through this discussion, I understand, one, why you were nominated for National Teacher of the Year, and two, why you have the position that you have right now. And what I can say is that we are proud of you here in Connecticut. We are honored to have you representing Connecticut in any way, shape, or form. And I am just blown away by the work that you're doing. And what you stand for, I appreciate it. And I thank you and thank you and thank you again. And even furthermore, thank you for taking the time out to enlighten us on what it's like day to day doing what you do and the fight that you put up every single day and the things that you weren't afraid to ask for or ask for assistance with. You know, stepping up and saying, teach me how to, you know, fight for you. That speaks volumes. That speaks volumes because...
And I appreciate you inviting me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really want people to understand, all I know how to be is candid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't presume to know everything about this, but I can promise you that every day I'm learning. I am working as hard as I can and staying engaged and in touch with people. But I can't do this by myself. I try to pull back the curtain so that people can see I think we look at our elected officials, you know, as this arm's length relationship where, no, I can't really, that's the congresswoman, I can't talk to her. And I want people, I'm still Johanna Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
Help me to understand. Tell me what to say so that when I go in the room, I can know what I'm talking about. And that's at all levels. And what I realized when I first took this role, my office would get thousands of calls. And what I realized very quickly that there were the same calls from the same people.
Mm.
And then I said, you know what? I had this problem before, and I never thought to call my congressperson. So I really wanted people from all walks of life, from all neighborhoods, from all backgrounds to know, wait, I'm your congressperson too.
Mm.
You know, you have access to this office just like anyone else. And I think that kind of upset the apple cart because there were some people, there was like a VIP room in these offices where, no, this is a person that's always had like a front row seat and the ear of the congressperson. I was like, no, I want to run this office a little different.
Mm.
There is no distinction. Everybody here has value. I don't care if it's, you know, the homeless guy that comes in and we're helping him get benefits or the largest employer in the district. It doesn't matter. I'm here to serve everybody.
Wow.
And that's what I've tried to do. And I want people to know that I can't do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
I need people to get out and vote. I need people to be educated. I need people to register to vote. I need people to be engaged. Because what I'll tell you, big man,
mm-hmm.
every day I'm in Congress, we're taking a vote on something that affects you and your children, whether
mm-hmm.
it's their education, their health care, the air they breathe, the price of medications, we're voting on it. So whether or not you choose to speak up really is irrelevant because the votes are happening with or without you.
Wow.
So people really need to look at their representatives and hold them accountable and say, are you truly representing me? Are you reaching back and talking to me? Are you doing the job that I sent you to do? And if not, use the power of the ballot to change the guards if you have to.
Mm.
You know, I don't take anything for granted. I don't think, like I said before, these seats are not anointed or appointed. And at the point where the people in this district feel I'm not working for them, they have a responsibility to vote for someone else. So I have a responsibility to serve, and they have a responsibility to hold me accountable. And that's what we need. I think for too long, we've let people get away with too much-ish. And now we're at a point where we need to be asking questions and demanding answers and looking for our leaders to follow up on what they said.
Yes.
You know, to follow through on the promises that they made. And if they're not doing that, I think shame on us. If we allow people to stay in positions for decades, you know, and not do what they're supposed to do. When I look at what's going on in the Senate, shame on everybody in this country if they send the message, oh, no, we're good with that.
Mm.
So,
absolutely.
Listen,
absolutely.
I know we hear it all the time. Elections have consequences. This is the most important election in our lifetime. But on November 3rd, we are voting for our humanity, you know, for, and even if your family is okay, if you can say, you know what, I'm good, that's one thing. But if you can't say, and so are all the people around me and all of my neighbors and all of my friends, there's still room for you to do some work.
Mm,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, thank you for bringing me on and for giving me so much, being so generous with your time as well. And just for creating this platform to have these conversations, because I think now more than ever, we need to have some really honest and candid conversations. And I hope that maybe someone listening today heard something that they didn't know, or it sparked another question that they may or may not have had. And, you know, it'll compel them to reach out to my office and get some follow-up or see how we can help them. Or just register to vote.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Listen, Johanna Hayes, thank you. Johanna Hayes, I'm going to make sure I say it right. Thank you so much for today. And thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for continuing on. And I'm sure this won't be the last time that we speak. I hope not. I would love to have you on again.
Absolutely not. Invite me back anytime.
All right.
Oh, I forgot. I have to shout out my friend, Frank Capozzi, who I'm sure is listening because he always listens to you guys.
Thank you so much. Frank, how you doing, man? All right. So listen, we are going to party next. We have Sunday School, which is 2 hours of throwback classics. So hopefully you'll be tuned in for that as well.
All right. Anytime. Thank you.
All right.
Good luck.
All right. Keep it right here. It's Hot 93.7 Voices.
This week at Macy's, get ready for fall with an extra 20% off with